It's FCC Free Radio 107.3 FM and FCCFreeRadio.com. This is Sexploration with Monica. So, more sexual healing. We have kind of an alternative to Western medicine approach next on the agenda. Dr. Heather Howard is with us.
Hello, Monica.
Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you. So, we've been talking a lot about sexual healing. You have another approach coming from pelvic pain conditions. Is that right?
That's right. And actually, I wouldn't say my approach is alternative as much as integrative. What I'm really looking at is using what we know in the medical model mm-hmm. and then taking that and adding sexuality to the mix to see if we can actually increase the healing.
So basically,
leverage
with pelvic pain conditions, what starts to happen is you have so much pain that your nervous system will continue creating pain messages, even though the source of the pain may not be there anymore.
You've talked to me before, haven't you?
You think maybe.
You really listen.
Well, not yes. only that, but I just love your approach. And I love how it actually is related to Tantra and pleasure and getting what you want. But it's, you know, this wonderful, well-researched medical approach.
Right. So you're absolutely right.
And I love you.
Oh. Well, I love being here. So
good.
Yes. So yet I get a little bit distracted. What was your question again, Monica?
Okay, so we're talking about pelvic pain.
Yes.
And when your neurology is continuing
yes,
to be stuck in the
you.
Mode of like making pain.
Yes, that's right.
How does pleasure make your pain go away?
Right. So really, I'm just at the theory stage right now. I did only a pilot study looking at the potential for pleasure to change the pathways going to the brain. So basically, the pleasure and pain follow the same neural pathways.
So it's on the same
brain.
Nerves.
Yes, we think so. So what I'm looking at doing is actually overwhelming the nervous system with pleasure such that the pain signals can't then get through to the brain because there's really only so much input that the brain can take. It's up to the brain to interpret any kind of input as pleasurable or painful. Or actually is neutral.
Right.
And so the brain can take a lot of different signals and it's determining that's pain, that's pleasure. And often pain is a warning sign of something going wrong. But as you said correctly, with a chronic condition, even if there's no cause that is left or we could mm-hmm. never even find an initial cause of pain, somehow the nervous system continues to send the pain signals. So what we're looking at is creating some sort of input that can override the signals getting to the brain that say pain.
Right.
And so that's the theory. And so I've really only been able to work with three couples in a pilot study to see if this would be effective for them. Mm-hmm. And they did well working with the protocol of the study. I also actually have a colleague here who's a somatic sexologist who's been starting to use this theory in her work, and she's reporting that she's having good success with a couple clients with pelvic pain. And so, you know, a lot of the work is really, I think some of the things you were talking about in the past, I wasn't here to hear your interviews, mm-hmm. but a lot of it is taking your mind to places. And so it's what I work with clients is really to train the brain to be able to almost be in a meditative state and visualize the pleasure overriding the pain signals. Because, you know, I've been asked by physicians, well, then how do you work with clients? And so one of the things we really do is help them to find their skills in visualization and in sensate focus, really focusing on the sensation at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And as I would describe it to them, latching on to the pleasure.
Right.
So that, you know, that is where their focus is. And if the pain gets a little strong, that they would increase the pleasurable stimulus.
Right.
And then, you know, and so really giving them control over their experience. So for someone, let's say, who has pain with intercourse, one of the things that a lot of my clients say, and it's always so surprising to them, and I say, well, you know what? As soon as it starts hurting, why don't you stop doing whatever you're doing? And they say, oh, I can do that. I never even thought of that. You know, I just kind
right.
of, once I start, I think
just
I have
giving
to
them
go
permission.
Through and finish.
Right.
And they say, oh, So then we really work with having them focus on what they're sensing
right.
and stopping at the point of pain.
Right.
So that they, because there can be a slight level of discomfort.
Right.
And then there can be pain.
Right.
And so it's really helping each person figure out where that line is for them.
Right.
And having them stay with a bit of discomfort and use the pleasure to help them manage that discomfort so that they're feeling pleasure. And then at the point that it's too painful or they're feeling too much pain, they can stop that stimulus or that stimulation and then go just to the pleasurable stimulation to really get their nervous system back into the pleasure and focused again. So,
well, that sounds so much better than, like, I don't know, taking drugs or something. You're overwhelming your body with pleasure to treat a medical condition.
Yes. And but I will say a lot of people need to be on drugs even just to begin to be sexual because they're in so much pain.
Mm.
With a chronic, you know, there's so many types of chronic conditions. Some people just have like a kind of cyclical chronic pain where they have pain at changes in their hormonal cycle.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, they may have a flare and then they'll feel better for a period of time. It could
mm-hmm.
be months. It could be a year. It could be, you know, weeks. And then they may have another flare again. And then for some people, they have unabating pain. And so, you know, it's very hard to tell them to focus on the pleasure when all they know is pain.
Right.
And so with clients like that, I'd really work with them to find some source of pleasure. Sometimes it's just going out and watching a sunset. But,
oh,
you know,
sure.
Because people aren't oriented towards pleasure. Their
right.
whole lives are focused on trying to relieve
avoid
pain.
Avoid pain.
Right.
Right.
And so really,
which is still a pain focus.
Absolutely.
And, so
and the medical
stuck.
Model is focused on
mm-hmm.
relieving pain, not
right.
building pleasure.
Right.
So when working with the medical model, we really like to take it a step, or I like to take it a step further as a sexologist and help people find any source of pleasure that they can and build on that. You know, the model that I use in my clinical practice is the cognitive behavioral model. And what you're doing is you're finding someone's comfort zone
mm.
or finding what they're capable of, if
mm-hmm.
you will. And then you're building that out. You're not sending them into something that is very uncomfortable or into the unknown necessarily. You're trying to start with comfort. And then you just add a little and a little and a little at a time. So you find any source of pleasure.
Like
any.
A foot massage.
Absolutely.
And not maybe focusing so much on the genitals or the pelvis because they're in pelvic pain, but then just...
Any pleasure. Yeah, it doesn't have to be sexual pleasure at all. Pleasure can come in so many forms.
Like just any kind of sensual pleasure or even just any kind of...
Or just a moment where you're not even focused on pain, where you
right.
can focus on something else, because then that can help you, that can help give you some grounding
mm-hmm.
in your visualization later. Go to that place that felt good. Sometimes you can't even remember a place that feels good. So first
right.
you have to identify that.
Right. Cool.
Oh, so what kind of success have you had with this? Like, do you find that people get onto it pretty quickly or it takes time to build up?
It really depends on where someone is in their treatment with their pain condition when they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
So most people come to me when they found some sort of stability in their condition and then they're ready to try something new. If they're in so much pain that they can hardly think
mm.
about anything else, then they're probably not going to be searching even for a sexologist. They wouldn't even think that I could help them at this stage.
Really? You can be so bogged down with your pain that you can't even think to find help.
Well, the type of help that you're looking for would be often, you know, finding a neurologist to do a nerve block or,
oh, right.
you know, a lot of people mm-hmm. are looking for something very, you know, a very, I wouldn't say invasive, but an overwhelming treatment to try
right.
to feel better because they can't find any relief from
right.
pain. And so it'd be hard for people to even think to look for me at that point.
Right.
That's not to say that I couldn't help them again with the visualization and finding pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to be thinking pleasure when they're just thinking absence of pain.
Yeah, right.
That's going to be their focus. So I normally find people when they're ready to focus more on quality of life
okay.
issues.
Right.
And so really, I kind of get a self-selecting clientele. It's
mm-hmm.
people who are ready to do the work, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of it. If someone comes to me and they're not really wanting to be there, I can't do much for them because they're doing all the work.
Of course.
I'm just facilitating.
Right, because they're the ones that are retraining their neurology.
Right, and so I can educate them and give them models and ways to think about it, but they have to be in the moment doing the work.
Right.
So that's So really, to answer your question, I have success, but a lot of it is that people come to me when they're ready. And okay. But I think that's the case with most types
with
of
any
treatment.
Kind of work. I mean, even if you're just quitting smoking, or I mean, with anything you're doing, if you're, you know, doing a nutrition plan, you can go to a nutritionist all you want, but if you're not ready to, you know,
right.
if you're not ready to eat vegetables,
right?
If you're not ready to experience pleasure, there's only so much that Dr. Howard can do for you.
Right, and it's not even just experiencing pleasure, but it's if you're not ready to be conscious and to go on that journey. And there's nothing wrong with that if you're not ready to do that. It's just that I can't really help you at that point.
Right.
And so a lot of my work with people is even just helping them to identify in the first session what their goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe their goals aren't to do the type of work that I can help them with. And even just becoming aware of where you are and what it is you're looking for can be very valuable.
Oh, well, but, how are you going to get what you want unless you know what it is?
Yep. So
you're doing a 4-week series with women only.
Yes, very excited. This is a new workshop that I've just put together, and I can't wait to have the first one.
Mm.
It is in April. It's
mm-hmm.
4 Thursdays in a row starting April 8th. It's mm-hmm. in the evenings from 6:30 to 8:30. And it is a sexual enrichment workshop for women only. And
so it's going to be a big group of women and all talking about like ways to become...
Actually, this is only going to be limited to 8 women.
Oh.
So if you're interested, it'd be good to sign up soon because I have to limit the numbers so everyone has enough time to talk and to interact.
Sure.
But this is actually for people who have health challenges. And what we'll be looking at is the relationship between a health condition and how you interact with yourself and other people as a result of that. Because often when we have a health condition, it changes the way that we view ourselves. It changes our entire identity.
Right.
Often, let's say that
like a sick person.
Yep. And let's say we have a pain condition that prevents us from having touch or intimacy or intercourse. You know, that what I hear from a lot of clients and what I heard from people over and over in my study was that if they could no longer do what they thought they should do as a male or a female and perform their duties.
Oh,
they didn't feel like women anymore
or
they didn't feel like men anymore. They felt like half a person.
Right.
And so often when people have some sort of health challenge, it really affects their entire identity as a male or female.
Right. And it would, of course, affect their relationship, too, because
Absolutely.
They would be feeling guilty and also really put upon in a way that they couldn't deliver.
That's right. So we're going to be looking at that, how it's affected their relationships with family, with friends, with partners, and also with themselves. And we'll be focusing on body image. And really, group process is so powerful because I can do a lot of work with people in session. I can go very deep. But there's also something to be said for feeling supported in an environment where you know that you're not alone.
That's
and maybe
right.
your experience is a bit different than everyone else's because a pain condition of any sort is heterogeneous. You know, no one experiences anything the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that you're not the only one having these struggles, because
right.
the types of struggles tend to be common for people, it really gives people that sense of community.
Right. Like you're not the only person that's going through something like that.
Yeah. And it can be so isolating with a partner and with a family, and people may have difficulty understanding.
And even just having the permission to talk about sex with people is such a gift.
Yes.
I remember that's one of the things that I loved about our pleasure education party, because we had like 30 women and we're all sitting there and drinking wine and hanging out and just really like talking about pleasure and sex toys and lubrication and female ejaculation and making it a sacred sexual space.
That's right.
It's so good.
Right. So we're going to take that and make it a much smaller, more intimate group even. And it'll be a series so that you'll the women will have time to really develop that intimacy
connection.
And that safety and connection. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, by the fourth session, they'll really be able to do some profound work that they might not have been able to do in just a one night workshop or even just a one day intensive. So
awesome.
I'm very excited about that.
And so some of the things you're going to be looking at is how to find pleasure or how to.
So this is really. It's going to be ideal for women whose health challenges have affected their identity, their body image, and their relationships. And it'll help each participant to regain sexual comfort and some options as well, because they can identify what it is they might like to try and also to reconnect with their bodies, as well as to access the wisdom of their bodies, which is really important. A lot of times when people have some sort of pain condition or health condition, they disconnect.
They feel betrayed by their body.
Absolutely. They feel betrayed. And also with pain, often you don't want to feel it anymore.
Right.
So you just
shut it
try
off.
Not to feel
right
anything. Yes.
Even pleasure.
That's right. Mm. And so what we're going to do is to have people try to reconnect with their bodies. And their bodies have a lot of information for them. And sometimes when you have a chronic health condition, when you can have access to the voice of the body or to the body, you actually gain a lot of information, which can help you heal.
Right.
Often the part of the body that's hurting has a message for you.
Right.
So, and that's a lot of the work that I do with people in clinical sessions as well, is really facilitate their hearing the voices of their bodies. Right. In the group, we'll be able to have people connect and identify what's going on with their bodies, and they'll do home exercises where they'll get a little bit more connection with themselves, and then they'll come back and be able to process together as a group.
Oh, cool.
So, yes.
So these home exercises are like solo exercises or with a partner?
In the women's workshop, there'll be solo exercises. It's really learning to touch base with oneself.
Mm.
I have another workshop also in April, which is just a one-day intensive, and that's on the 17th of April, and that is for individuals and couples who have health challenges. And in that one, we'll be looking at communication skills, mm-hmm. and that'll be more interactive. There will mm-hmm. be exercises right then and there for people to do together. It's only one day, so they won't be able to take home exercises and then come back and process, but they can certainly take home mm-hmm. a lot with them and continue the process.
And that's Saturday, April 17th?
Yes, it's from 11 to 6. So.
And how do people like sign up for it? How do they get more information?
They can go to my website, which is www.sexualrehab.com. And the front page will show them the upcoming events, and mm-hmm. they can just click right there and find more information and register right on the site.
Excellent.
Yes.
So there's two workshops here that we're talking about. One is for women only, and that's on Thursday, April 8th that starts.
Yes, for four Thursdays. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the second one is April 17th for couples and individuals.
That's right.
And it just sounds really interesting because you'll have all these people together talking about sex and then finding ways that they can take other people's ideas and your ideas and just get more joy and more pleasure.
Right. Because even though I'm a sex expert, mm-hmm. I'm only one person, and every person has wisdom for him or herself. So you really do gain so much from group process.
Right.
And so the other workshop is focusing more on, like I said, relationship, mm-hmm. and it'll help participants identify their sexual goals better mm-hmm. and find some potential pleasurable options. So that's going to be a lot more focused on options,
mm-hmm.
whereas the other ones focus more on emotional
right.
well-being and connection
and
with the body.
And reconnection with mm-hmm. yourself. And cool.
Right. So, yeah, and skills building. Is the intensive is more skills building as well.
Mm-hmm. So you've done a lot of clinical work and a lot of research about pelvic pain conditions, but how did you come to this work?
Well, I came to the work because I myself have a pelvic pain condition, and I was fully debilitated by it back in 2001. As I was recovering, I was seeing a lot of different medical doctors, mm-hmm. as well as physical therapists, Heller worker, a Feldenkrais practitioner. I was doing a lot of different things to heal.
Anything you could, the shotgun approach.
Well, yes, and finding really, but really it's, you have to try something and see what works for you.
Right.
And then, you know,
right.
Mm-hmm. And I tend not to try, you know, in my approach, managing a chronic pain condition, because I live with it and I will live with it my whole life. My management approach is really only to add on a new treatment, you know, every so often, so that I have time to process and integrate it.
Because you're a scientist and you want to know which one is working.
Well, that's right. And, you know, at the time when I was desperate and I was in so much pain that I couldn't even walk,
right.
You know, I really wow. did do a lot. I was doing physical therapy 5 days a week, and I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had body workers come to my house at times that I couldn't actually even make it to my sessions. So,
wow.
So at that time, you know, you're in crisis management.
Right.
But then at some point when you start feeling a little bit better and you want to make marginal progress, mm-hmm. it's really, in my approach, for myself, I can't tell other people what to do, but sure. for myself, I tend to try something new, sit with it for a few months because I really can't tell if it's helping or not. My condition changes every day.
Right.
And a lot of people who have, you know, health challenges really aren't the same from day to day. It's not like it's a linear thing, and healing isn't linear. So sometimes you're going to fluctuate and it has nothing to do with the treatment at all.
Right.
And so you really want to give something enough time to see if you're getting better over a couple cycles,
right.
or if, you know, or if it's just, you just happen to luck out at the time that you tried it. And then you know, it's kind of like wearing your moldy socks as a sports player, right?
Right.
You know, and you never
totally.
Want to take
They're
them off.
They're my lucky socks.
Right.
I'm sticking with them.
Right. But it just might be that you were wearing them the day you won your first game, but it might not actually be the socks that are helping you win.
We're just saying.
Well, it'd be like lucky underwear for pelvic pain, though, right?
Right. I was going to say, exactly. Underwear would be the better analogy. Right. But anyhow, yes, I'll never wash that underwear. Although that could really perpetuate your pain condition, too,
with all the bacteria.
But we digress.
So, indeed. We're talking with Dr. Heather Howard, who is a specialist in pelvic pain conditions. She's got a couple workshops coming up. One is for women only, and it seems like it's going to be limited to a fairly small group of people, and you're going to be sharing experiences with each other. So this is a way to really like reconnect with your body. And let's talk a little bit more about the wisdom of the body and how we can tune into that.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk about, in light of this, it fits really well with a condition that we've talked in general about pelvic pain, but mm-hmm. I haven't really talked about a specific condition. I'll be speaking at the ASECT conference coming up in June, which is the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, about a condition called vaginismus.
Oh, that's painful intercourse. Is that mm-hmm. right?
It is. And so I figured...
And it's also a clenching, a muscular clenching?
Yes. So that... That's right. So the definitions have historically been, they've looked at a spastic kind of reaction mm-hmm. To any kind of attempt or even perceived attempt mm-hmm. at penetration.
Mm-hmm.
It could be intercourse, it could be tampon, it could be a medical exam, mm-hmm. but any kind of attempted penetration. And so I figured because we tend to talk about it, pelvic pain in general, it'd be good to talk about a specific condition
mm-hmm.
That's a very difficult condition to diagnose and treat.
Well, don't some people treat it as a psychological condition because she's just hysterical and afraid of penis?
Right. Well, we don't use the word hysterical anymore, but I think
Thank
you're
God.
Absolutely right that a lot of people still view conditions as, you know, hysterical conditions.
Right.
Vaginismus It was defined in the DSM,
the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, which is how
mental disorders mm-hmm. exactly as a psychologically based disorder.
Mm-hmm.
We thankfully people have a better understanding now that it is a mind body condition.
Well, now we're really tapping into the whole idea that there is such a thing as a mind body. And the reason I think that they were saying it was a mental condition is because sometimes it happened to, for instance, rape survivors. You know, they would get vaginismus after a traumatic sexual experience.
That's right. And so really, you can't put everyone in the same category who's having difficulty with penetration.
Right.
There is going to be often a pain component, and there's going to be a phobic avoidance of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not the underlying cause of the pain is some sort of neurological condition or even musculoskeletal condition, or it's simply, you know, coming from tension that the, you know, the mm-hmm. mind is creating out of mm-hmm. fear, mm-hmm. there's still an actual pain experience.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's experience is different. Everyone's history is different. And so you can't just simply put people in some sort of cookie cutter treatment. One of the problems with vaginismus is it can even be very difficult to rule out other sources of pain because these people may have an avoidance of even the exam by the doctor.
Right. Well, it sounds like some pelvic pain conditions are so severe that even like touching the skin around the vulva or vagina seems like it's painful, and that's just like, you know, a fingertip brushing.
Right.
Like any sensation is painful.
Right. And just on that note, a lot of times when people say that there's a problem or with some or a sexual challenge, they'll call it a sexual dysfunction. While yeah. that term may be a standard medical term, my problem with it is that actually, if you have a pain condition, the body is acting functionally by avoiding future pain.
Right.
And resisting.
And telling you that something's wrong.
Right. So I don't use the word dysfunction. What we really are just doing is trying to understand what's going on. It's just that simple. So there is typically a psychological component regardless of the initial cause. If the initial cause was fear and then it created this cycle of pain or tension, which then creates more fear, then that's one thing. It also might be that there really is an underlying organic problem that needs to be treated. And so regardless of the initial cause, we really need to look at it from a biopsychosocial perspective and really try to separate those things out. But in the treatment, that's really understanding all of the factors.
Mm-hmm.
But in the treatment, the goal is to help someone integrate mind and body. What's happening with vaginismus is someone has, you know, in the definition, there's an express desire to have penetration, but the body is resisting it.
I see.
And so the mind and the body are not meeting.
Agreeing. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And so when there's this discord, my belief is that you don't treat it by overriding the body's defense mechanism.
Right. You don't just try to go ahead and shove it in there.
Right. Or just say there's no problem in there, just go for it.
Right.
Really what I do in my work is help someone identify what the fear really is. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, what are they afraid of? We try to rule out any underlying causes. And also, you'd educate someone about how the body works, how the sexual response cycle works. And again, you're building out their safety zone and their
right.
comfort zone. So you find what they can be comfortable with and you start building that out slowly.
I actually had vaginismus for about 6 months. Once after experiencing a terrible experience with someone, I had the worst crush on this person, and we both got way too intoxicated. And you know, I was like, no, I don't want to have sex with you tonight. It feels like it's just going to be casual sex tonight. I don't want to do it. But I was really into him and I was really turned on. And so he kind of thought that, oh, that meant yes. And so he kind of just pushed and pushed and pushed. And then eventually, you know, I was like, okay, fine. If you're, you know, going to do it, use a condom. And then of course the next day he was like, oh, that was cool. You know, whatever. And I was like, I really wanted you to be my boyfriend. And like, kind of got all like it really felt, it was very traumatic and I had to see this person every day. And then the next time I tried to have sex, I was totally turned on. I was totally into it. I really wanted to have sex with him. And there was no vagina there. Mm-hmm. Like it was, you know, there was the vulva opening and everything. And just, there wasn't a hole. It was all completely closed. And we tried. And I was like, I really want to do this. And, you know, we had the condom on there and I was really turned on and it was wet and everything. But it was just like, it's just, there was no vagina.
So how did you end up managing
that? I just kept rolling around on the carpet with him and we did some other stuff and we had a great time and we cuddled and kissed and made out in front of the fire and then we kind of moved on. We just didn't have penis vagina intercourse.
But you said this continued for about 6 months. Mm. What did you do over the course of the 6 months?
I just
months?
Didn't try to have sex again until okay. about, I think it was 7 months later when I tried again and then it worked, but it was with a different partner. It was in the context of safety. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like it was like this person that I tried with before, it was our first time together and, you know, we didn't know each other very well. So even though I wanted to, I don't think that I was feeling like it was too soon after the first incident. And then also like, I just wanted to feel safe. Like I was really in a relationship, you know, because back then it felt really scary to have casual sex. Because, you know, someone would have sex with me and then never talk to me again, you know?
Sure.
And so, and I think that, you know, that plus doing, you know, doing this with my coworker when I really didn't want to, when we were both really drunk and I just felt really betrayed by him, you know, I think that, you know, plus, you know, pl- plus new sexual experiences and not really knowing, you know, what my relationship was with this person where we were kind of rolling around in front of the fire. I think my body was just like, I don't think it. No, no one's. This is a no-go zone. And, you know, it was really interesting. I didn't know your vagina could just be like a big no to sex.
Right. So, I mean, your body has its own voice.
Right. It's like, I'm sorry, there's no room in here.
But it sounds like you got to the point where over that 7 month period, you really tuned into your body and you honored it.
Right.
And so by the time you finally did try to have intercourse again, you had gotten over that trauma. Your body felt heard
safe again.
And safe, you know, and that's really key. Mm-hmm. So you did everything right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people need lessons and how to do that. And often they haven't had an experience of sex that was successful. In the case of, let's say, someone who has primary vaginismus, they've never had intercourse that's been pleasurable. And so, you know, they need to learn from step one.
Right.
And that can be, it can take a long time, and you can't force the body. Again, the body has its own pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can, that is a condition that can take a long time for someone to address. Because really, their mind and body need to be working together, and the body can take a lot longer to get ready. We can want to go full steam ahead with our minds, but that doesn't mean that our bodies are catching up.
Totally. So, yeah, you could be just rolling around in front of the fire, and it could be the perfect moment for your brain, but your body's like, no, thank you. Yeah.
But also, when you think about the time before, which brought it on, there, your mind and your body were not really...
Also at odds.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dr. Heather Howard. She is a board-certified sexologist, and she does clinical work with pelvic pain. You did a really interesting study where you worked with three couples. What was that study called?
The lay title or
Please.
The actual? Okay. So it's looking at the potential for sexual response to help the healing process in pelvic pain conditions.
So what she was looking at was overwhelming pain signals with pleasure. And we need to take a quick break. And I need to tell you quickly that she's doing some workshops in the Bay Area, and you can find out more about those workshops if you do have a pelvic pain condition and are looking for ideas and healing at sexualrehab.com. Is that right, Dr. Howard?
And the workshops actually are for people of any kind of sexual challenge, not just for people with pelvic pain.
Oh.
So, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for making that clear. And
sexualrehab.com, yes, correct.
Excellent. So we'll be talking more about sexual healing. This is Sexploration with Monica. FCC Free Radio, 107.3 FM and FCCFreeRadio.com. This is Sexploration with Monica. Dr. Heather Howard and I are putting together another pleasure education party. I'm really looking for, I think the last one was super fun.
It was.
We had like 25 girls. And we're all talking about dildos and sacred sexuality and female ejaculation. It was really fun. And so we're going to do it again.
We decided it has to be a continuing tradition.
Yeah. So the next one is Tuesday, May 4th, and it's going to be at the Supper Club in the Chamois Noir. And so we just sit around on the Supper Club's beds, and we'll have a glass of wine. So it'll be a little bit of a wine summit, and it'll just be a chance for us to learn more about how to have more pleasure.
Absolutely. And I should say also, just to remind people, as soon as you have the registration up on your site, people should RSVP earlier rather than later, because we sold out. We oversold last time.
It was hard because I really have trouble being like, no, you can't come to the party. You know what I mean? But we ended up like having like 10 more people than I meant to. And so we're really going to be more firm about having an upper limit this time.
Yes. Well, there are only so many tushes that can fit on that bed. So
I mean, we can fit a lot of tushes on the bed, but I just want to provide a quality experience for everyone.
That's right.
So
do you do these kind of things for that involve men too?
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the pleasure education workshops and parties I do are privately scheduled. So if any of your listeners want to have their own, either just have a girl's night or a couple's night or a men's night only, you're welcome to call me or to contact me via the website, and we can go ahead and schedule an event. But it's a good introduction to sex for people who are looking for newer and wanting new information. And then there are people who are old hat, who know a lot, they've seen a lot of toys, they know a lot, and they get to see the latest, greatest toys out there. So I really gear it towards the group that's coming.
So as our token straight guy, you're like the representative of all dudes, right? So what would it be like for you to go to a party where we all sit around and drink wine and talk about sex toys? And what would be the most interesting thing that you would want to learn from something like that?
Well, I don't know. I think the most interesting part about that is I don't really know what to expect.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just feels like it sounds interesting, and you know, I would love to know more.
Right. Well, I think the most memorable things that people take home from a pleasure education party, it's really a sense of community, and it's a sense of safety where there's a place in the world where, I mean, we have this right here at Sexploration with Monica, where mm-hmm. we're allowed to talk freely about sex. There aren't a lot of sacred spaces where we can say everything that we want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't a lot of groups and communities in which we can really do that. And everyone comes with their own experience, their own concerns, their own fears, insecurities, and everyone walking in the room has a different experience, but there's this bonding that goes on
mm-hmm.
when you feel that you're in a safe space. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a place to explore talking about pleasure. And most of us didn't get pleasure education growing up. We might have had something called sex education, which is typically anatomy and physiology, if we get that, and then everything we should be afraid
and
of.
And don't have sex. Yeah.
Right. Everything, all the risks.
And then they
sex.
Show you the cauliflower-like growths and the
right.
open sores.
Right. Which are things that we should be aware of. But
sure.
it should also, I think, be balanced by why is it that we even want to have sex in spite of all of those cauliflower growths?
Right, right.
So I think, you know, I think we'd believe those people doing the sex education and we'd listen more if we thought that they were giving us balanced information.
Right.
And really talking about why we've devoted so much time and energy and art throughout the history of the world to sex.
Right.
There's just no acknowledgement of that. So, you know, now hopefully we're moving out of the abstinence only education policies.
Right.
But, yeah, so it's really a chance for people. A lot of people didn't learn anything about pleasure. Maybe they had access to some books as they were growing up, but certainly there's so much shame about sex and secrecy and privacy that to be in a setting in which it's perfectly acceptable and encouraged to be able to discuss it is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And
really fun.
Yeah. And in San Francisco, you know, we think, oh, well, this is San Francisco. People are totally comfortable with their sexuality.
And yet still, it's hard to, like, find a group of people and really talk about sex openly. It's
right.
really...
And people bring their... Still, they bring their own concerns and shame and messages mm-hmm. that they brought mm-hmm. with them from long ago. It's hard to really shed those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very healing experience for a lot of people. It's not just what you take home in terms of the learning, which is important, but it's really just what it feels like to have sex be absolutely acceptable and normal.
Mm-hmm.
And...
At a party, it's really kind of fun.
Yeah. And to have a community. And mm-hmm. a lot of people develop, you know, once they meet at a pleasure education party, they actually develop friendships and they have people they can talk to on an ongoing basis about their sexuality if mm-hmm. they feel like branching out. When people host private parties, then they're often with groups of their friends. And so it really expands the nature of their friendships.
Right. Because then you can say, oh, I've talked about sex with this person before, so I could... you know, safely communicate what I want, or I could talk about, I could fight in someone with a problem. You know, you've created a standard where it's okay to talk about this one particular thing. That's why the conversations after the pleasure education party were so fun, because everyone felt really safe to be really open. And it wasn't that we were just, you know, stuck on sexuality. It's just that, you know, sometimes you just don't get a chance to talk about it. So when you do, there's just so much to say.
Absolutely.
So I hope you can join us. The Pleasure Education Party is May 4th. That's a Tuesday.
You know, on that note, I think we should designate one of the events to be a co-ed night.
Mm-hmm.
I think this next one...
We can talk about whether or not.
We can talk about it.
I mean, would you come May 4th? Do you think you're going to be in town?
If I'm here, I'll come,
right.
Sure.
He's thinking about going to Istanbul.
Oh, okay.
Or Bali or something.
Well, so we'll just plan our entire schedule
around your schedule.
I would appreciate that.
Well, anything.
You guys are very accommodating.
Sure. Well, you represent all men out there. So.
Right.
I am
right.
the token guy.
You right. are the token guy.
Is the Pleasure Education Party on sexualrehab.com?
It is. I put the date up there. I but we haven't put where to register yet. So that will come up in the next couple of days when you and I work all that out.
Oh, yeah.
So
and of course, if you do, if you are interested, you can always send me an email at 107.3fm@gmail.com. That's the frequency of the radio station, 107.3fm@gmail.com. And if you're interested in a co-ed event or if you're interested in a women's only event, just let me know. And if you have questions for Dr. Heather Howard, our studio lines are open right now at 415-513-5239. Her specialty is overwhelming pelvic pain, any kind of pain in the groin area, in the genitals with intercourse or even just being touched, overwhelming those pain sensations with pleasure. And we were talking a little bit about vaginismus earlier, and people might not know, just tuning in, what vaginismus is. What is it?
It's a condition in which a woman expressly wishes to have intercourse, but her body just won't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's really where the mind and the body are not acting together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tricky condition to work with because everyone's situation is different. But the critical element in treating it, I believe, is to really get access to the voice of the body. So we hear the person coming in speaking from their mind saying,
right,
I want to have sex. What's wrong with me? I'm so frustrated with my body.
Right.
And so it's really talking to the body to say, well, what's going on with you?
Right.
And once we facilitate the voice of the body, we have a lot more information and we really know how to move forward with the treatment.
Right. And the body's like, I'm totally freaked out by this. I don't want to do it. And then, or whatever is the situation for each person. I know that when it happened for me, it was about not feeling safe. And I think that, you know, I think that my body was just like, you know, I'm just going to not play. I just don't want to do this. And we can roll around on the carpet and enjoy the fire and making out and all that. But I just don't want to get involved in the intensity and complexity of sex. And I think that that once I started to feel safe again, that's what made it feel better.
And I would say you were having sex rolling around by the fire.
That's
you
right.
You just weren't having intercourse. Your body had its boundaries.
Totally. That's a great distinction. And that's a really good way of healing yourself because then you can start feeling safe, you know, doing things that I think oftentimes we only think of sex and we're like, oh, that's penis, vagina, intercourse. Mm-hmm. But there's so many ways to have sex.
And I think when it comes to this condition specifically, when people go for treatment, the assumption is, well, success means you'll be able to tolerate a phallic-sized object in your vagina.
Mm.
Well, we haven't really asked the voice of the body what success would be.
Right.
And perhaps even when we talk to the person, giving them permission to have a different goal, they might come out with, really, it's my partner who wants to have intercourse. I could live happily for the rest of my life without ever having penetrative sex.
Right.
Because I don't get any pleasure from it.
Right.
And it's not really serving me.
Right.
So I think it's very important to not assume anyone's goals.
Right.
And to not assume that the only type of sex is penis-vagina sex. That's not the only successful and mature sex. Thank you, Dr. Freud.
yeah, right. So what are some of the things that people are choosing as their goals, their pleasurable outcomes? What are some of the other pleasures out there for people if they're getting stuck on penis-vagina intercourse?
Yeah, I think what I'm finding with a lot of the clients is they just want to feel that they can be touched by their partners and touch their partners. It's not necessarily having an act in mind,
mm-hmm.
but that they know that they can be touched and it's going to be pleasurable and there's not going to be a demand for something that may not be comfortable or pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest key. It's not necessarily just the act mm-hmm. that they're listing. But a lot of people would just like to find to use the opportunity to learn other ways to experience pleasure. So they'll want to learn. And some people who come in with vaginismus have discomfort with other types of sexual behavior as well, such as oral sex, either giving or receiving, or with even just they're afraid to hurt their partner.
Right.
They're afraid to receive pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't even know how to experience pleasure. So we really just work with each person to find out what the goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just want to learn how to feel comfortable giving oral sex and also to be skilled doing that. Mm-hmm. Some people, and so a lot of the work is really just helping people identify what it is that they want, mm-hmm. rather than, and giving them permission to have sex that is satisfying for them, not that's defined by some external norm somewhere out there, or that they're, or to submit to the agenda of their partner.
Right.
So that's really what it is that most people are looking for, is to feel like they have their own voice and to find what it is that they enjoy.
And the 4-day workshop that Dr. Heather Howard is teaching is all about connecting, you know, finding out what your voice is trying to figure out what the voice of your body is saying. It's a 4-week series for women only on Thursdays starting April 8th. You can find out more information at sexualrehab.com. And you also have a 1-day intensive workshop coming up for couples.
That's right. Yes. So that's looking more at skills building, mm-hmm. communication skills, and finding pleasurable options. It's focused more on finding solutions, identifying goals and finding solutions, whereas the other workshops focus more on just reconnecting mm-hmm. before being so goal-oriented.
Right. So you can find out more about Dr. Heather Howard's work at sexualrehab.com. The workshops and the pleasure education party that's coming up May 4th. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Heather.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's FCC Free Radio, 107.3 FM and FCCFreeRadio.com. This is Sexploration with Monica.